Thank you very much again for the opportunity to come and speak to you. This is where a clinician can get really excited about applications of MRE. And I think I would like to again thank all the co-authors and the department in Edinburgh for this work. So for this talk, I'm mainly interested in patients. So we're looking at patients who've got advanced knee osteoarthritis, who have undergone knee replacement surgery, and we're interested in the same muscle group. So I've got a little bit of background about osteoarthritis. I'm sure you're all aware it's a wear and tear type of arthritis, and in its severest form, it can lead to gross deformity within the knee joints. So if we look at these images here, we can see this is the normal knee, neutral. So we're looking at the mechanical axis here of the lower limb. We want the center of the femoral head to be centered over the knee, centered over the ankle, and this gives you the biomechanically best lever arm for movement. In osteoarthritis, what can happen in severe form is collapse of either compartment of the knee. So if you get a medial compartment osteoarthritis, you get this varus deformity. And in lateral compartment osteoarthritis, you get this valgus deformity. Now, in the vast majority of OA patients, they get a varus deformity of the knee. And in the aim of the total knee replacement is to try and achieve a normal mechanical axis after the surgery. So we want to put them back to how the muscles function optimally. So the outcome, as I said, there's two factors really in the outcome. The first is like the surgeon factors. So that means that the surgeon has to do their job properly. They need to ensure that everything's nicely aligned, and that can be done intraoperatively. Now the second part, which is sometimes overlooked, and I always stress this to patients when they come to see me in clinic, is that there's an awful lot of things that the patient can do to help their outcome in terms of muscle rehabilitation and muscle recovery. So in this study, we recruited from the SPHERE Total Knee Replacement Project, it was a randomized trial looking at patient-specific versus conventional surgery. I'm not going to bore you with the details of that project. So this is what we do in clinic. We would, there's a little bit of a clinical spin on this talk, just to make you aware. This is what we do in clinic. So we would get them standing. We get bilateral standing radiographs of the knees, orthogonal views, AP lateral. This is what we're up against. So you can see that this is data from the National Joint Registry in England and Wales. And you can see that there's an exponential increase in the amount of primary and revision cases for total knee replacement, whereas the hip seems to be fairly linear in their rise. And I think that kind of shows us how important the knee is and how complex the knee is. It's not just a simple hinge joint. There's a lot more complex movements, and dynamic stability is very important. So that just shows the importance of the muscles in this project. So the knee, a bit about the kinematics of the knee. So this is work done by Professor Freeman and Pinskarova in the Royal National Orthopaedic Hospital in Stanmore. And they looked at cadavers to see how the normal knee moves. So they came up with this design here where the medial side of the knee is more like a ball and socket joint, whereas the lateral side is more flatter. The fact that on the medial side, again, you've got any rollback up to 120 degrees of flexion, that contact area within the fairly constant. On the side, you can see that there's a significant amount of rotation happening on the tibia. So they came up with this design, this medial stabilized knee. This is not the only design that's out there, but this is the design that they proposed, and we've had some successful results with this. So the aim of this project, as I said, we were the mechanical properties and the morphology of the thigh muscles. So we had five patients, obviously they're towards the end as they're all going for knee replacements. And we did a scan before surgery and a scan 3 months after the operation. And again, we used a similar setup. So we used a non-inflated thigh tourniquet cuff with a resounding actuator at 25, 37 and a half and 50. Now, patients were quite weak. We couldn't get them to do the same exercise as we did with the healthy volunteers. So what we did was two conditions. One was knee relaxation, but they were flexed at 20 degrees, so muscle relaxed state. And then we asked them to extend the knee to activate the quadriceps. And the thighs were co-registered and analyzed with ESP as before. So this is our elastogram results. And I think first thing to point out is the marked muscle atrophy in the post-op group. I think this is the first study that has really shown that as surgeons, we know that doing a knee replacement is big trauma for the patients, but I don't think we really realized how much atrophy there is. And I think this is partly explained by the amount of pain patients are in, and they don't use their knee as much, and therefore they just get disuse atrophy. Second thing to point out is this marked stiffness increase in the post-op group at baseline. So there's a highly increased stiffness within the adductor and hamstring group. And the other thing to point out, which was an interesting finding, was that the quadriceps after the surgery did not increase as much as before the surgery. So there was less of a stiffness increase. And this is that same result in bar graph form. So you can see the G-star was markedly increased post-op, and particularly in the adductor group, we found the biggest change, and all the results were highly significant. So in conclusion, there's three main conclusions from this. So the first thing for me was that there was significant muscle atrophy, and I think we need to really, in clinic, get the patients to be engaged with physiotherapy and particularly focus on specific areas of the muscle, particularly the hamstrings. The other thing is that there was a significant increase in the muscle stiffness at baseline. So I think an explanation for that could be what Mike was saying earlier with the slightly contracted state. If patients get so bad arthritis so severe that their muscles start to contract, if you lengthen them with an operation, they're going to have to get used to that stretch again. So therefore, you're going to see some change in stiffness and significantly lower increase. This was the interesting finding, that the significantly lower increase in the quads muscle stiffness post-op with extension. I think to me that shows that physiotherapists are very good at targeting the quadriceps muscle, and little attention is paid to the back of back of the knee, the back of the thigh. And when we see patients coming back to clinic, very frequently they complain of pain at the back of the knee, and I think that's probably partly because their muscles are just weak and they just can't manage to rehabilitate that as effectively. So, that's kind of things I've just mentioned there. And for further work, I mean, this is all work in progress. As you see, our numbers are small, so we would like to recruit more patients into this study. However, further work, we have got EMG data as well, such as the maximal voluntary contraction, electromechanical delay, and rate of force development. So these are things we will be looking into as well, and to see whether the stiffness correlates with the strengthening. That's the second part of this study. I'd like to thank all my sponsors, and thank you very much for listening.
Questions?
Okay. Eli? I'll take advantage of having a clinician here to ask. So how would you envision using this data in your practice? Would it be patient by patient, or would you use a global study to inform best practice, or what sort of vision do you have of that?
Yeah, thanks very much for the question. I think MRE is very, from this meeting, is very novel, and it's been around for a while, but hasn't quite made it to clinical practice in certain areas. Certainly in the UK, we don't use it routinely. I don't know about the States; they might. I think it's used in liver, but I really believe in this technique. I think it's got great. It's a great adjunct to you in the clinic. Patients come to you quite frequently at a younger age now, and we're doing knee replacements. before they even reach the age of 50. And we're subjecting them to further surgeries later in life, and I think that can have great impact on their lives, and huge cost implications as well. So if we can try and use this technique to screen out patients and try and intervene early to prevent this progression, then perhaps it has some role there. So I truly believe, and many of my colleagues in the clinical world in Edinburgh have never even heard of this technique in orthopedics anyway. So trying to sort of teach them and show them the early results has been encouraging.
Question, yes, in the back.
Yeah.
Are you obtaining any other slices throughout the length
of the patient? No, we actually scan the patients. We have this resoundant actuator, and we scan the slices are through the center of this actuator. This is where we get the best waves. So I guess you could get more slices if you wanted to, but the waves might not be as good if you go further away from the actuator. I think the sagittal data that Mike presented is another very interesting bit of work to look at where exactly we're seeing stiffness changes and whether there's changes at the muscle tendon junction or whether it's more in the muscle belly. I think that's something we need to pursue. Yeah.
Okay. I have two quick questions.
Yeah.
If you could just go back a couple of slides.
Yep.
Keep going.
The results?
Before, yes. Before. One more.
Oh.
One more. One more. Keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
Do you want to?
I guess I missed it.
Which part was it?
Go back to the results. I'll only ask one question then.
Okay.
Yes, we can go here. So I was also, someone else asked this question, and I wanted to come back to it.
Yeah.
So you have what looks like big differences, but only small regions, even in your baseline case, are statistically significant. Can you say a word about how you did the multiple comparisons? And it seems like a conservative test.
Yes.
And is it intended to be that way? And
yes.
And just give us a little bit of detail on that.
Sure. I think with the significant maps, we're only got n equals 4, or n equals 5 for this one. So we're not really if we had more patients, perhaps we would get more significance. And there is a degree of variability between patients, so not all patients had the same amount of increase. So I'm presenting averages, so I should have maybe said that. Generally speaking, this is what we found.
Okay.
So, and it is very much a patient by patient thing. So perhaps. This technique initially should be used on a patient-by-patient level.
Is it a paired comparison, so it's before compared to after in the same, or during versus not during in the same patient compared to?
It's before and after the intervention, yeah.
Okay. Great. Oh.
Do you know if this is increase in stiffness post-op is palpable, so you can feel it or actually?
Yes, if you ask patients in clinic, they definitely all say they've got pain there, I think it would be. I haven't actually felt them after this study, so I would have to feel. But I think it would be. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Muscles are stretched and tendons are stretched as well. So, but I think the other important thing to note there is these hamstrings are biarticular muscles, so they cross two joints, so they're more complex than perhaps we think because they're acting in different ways. So, but that's something, thanks for that pointer.
Good, I have one last question myself. That is that knee extension, is that a typo? Is that how you spell extension in Scottish?
Oh, sorry. that's a typo.
Okay, thank you.